shit, you know it's the truth.
It's the truth. It's the truth. It's the truth. It's the truth.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Where curiosity and creativity meet. Oh yeah.
Something new. Yeah. Something new.
Real world creative expression.
Hello and welcome to Hyperactive Imagination, a high voltage channel for creativity. I'm your host, Anita Steubenraw. I'm an ex-Apple creative running an agency called Cause Effect Creative. I'm also building an event and retreat space called the Land of Make and Believe. And I'm hosting this show, where we engage with high voltage humans, ideas, and expression. High voltage energy can be illuminating. It can be dangerous. And sometimes it can inexplicably go to ground. Together, we'll explore these extremes and everything in between as we pursue what it means to live, work, and thrive as creative beings. As we continue our work on Hyperactive Imagination Season 2, we've decided to run a bonus collection of conversations I've had on other shows that you may not have heard. It's a chance to get to know me better through the lens and questions of other podcasters. This is a conversation I had with Dr. Mark Goulston on my wake-up call in July 2022.
Welcome to another episode of My Wake-Up Call. This is the podcast where I learn a little bit about my guests, and I want to save the getting to know them even more for the podcast. So you, my listeners and viewers, if any of this shows up in video somewhere in the internet, will quickly understand why I wanted to get to know my guests more and why I wanted you to have a front row seat as I did that. So let me tell you a little bit about Anita Steubenraw. She's the founder and principal of Cause Effect Creative, an agency that helps brands express visionary ideas with poetic power. Got to say that one again. Express visionary ideas with poetic power. That had me at hello, but there's much more to say. She's a consummate creative. She's an artist in whatever medium she chooses. Writing, painting, drawing, sculptor, photography, filmmaking, graphic design, interior design, conceptual framework building, getting dressed in the morning. It's all fair, fun, and fluid play. God, I already love this woman, and I don't even know who she is. Anyway, her playful and tenacious spirit landed her a full tuition scholarship at her alma mater, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and helped her rise from Apple retail store employee to visual designer of presentations given to Steve Jobs, author of Apple's Credo, and executive speechwriter to the former Apple senior vice president, Angela Arendts.
Arendts.
And today, in addition to running Cause Effect Creative, she's building an event and retreat space in Murphy's, California. It's called the Land of Make and Believe, and she joins us from there. And I think we all have to have Murphy's envy. That's better than Murphy's Law. What can I tell you?
Which is so funny because there's actually an establishment at the head of my driveway called Murphy's Law.
Really?
Really.
Wow. That's a tangent we may never get back from. But Anita, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. And I'll start out as I start with every guest, makes my life a little easier. And then the conversation hopefully follows. What's the through line in your life? You gave us a taste of it in the introduction. But as you step back and say, I think what's most consistent about me, in me, how I interact with the world is, and if you can amalgamate that into a purpose and calling, share that with us. And then tell us a little bit about your origin story, because I am a shrink, and wake up calls along the way, and let's get started.
Awesome. Yeah, if I think about my through line throughout my life, I would say it comes down almost to two words in the form of a question. What if? I mean, ever since I was a little kid, like that question is kind of foremost in my mind. Like, what if this is possible? What if I could do this? What if? And that's driven a lot of my experience, you know, whether it was trying to get my portfolio and my grades and my extracurricular activities and everything in a place where I could land a full tuition scholarship, because, you know, in my mind, that was the only way I was going to be able to get out of Kansas and, you know, into fulfilling some kind of dreams. You know, even with writing Apple's credo, you know, if they had sat me down and asked me to distill all that Apple is and aspires to be in like 173 words or less, it would have been paralyzing, right? But to get myself in the right frame of mind for that kind of work, you know, ask myself, what if I could listen to all of these voices of the employees and be a vessel for a united voice from them? What if I could speak on their behalf? It becomes less about me in that moment, being able to sort of lead from the point of what if. What's beautiful later in life is that sort of the bookend to what if becomes of course, you know, this like sort of course I've met you. Of course, these things started to fall into place the moment I really did step into my purpose. What if, and of course, it's kind of a beautiful pair. And if I think about purpose, you know, these are the kinds of things that I spend a lot of time thinking about, not just for myself, but for clients when I'm helping them to articulate mission, vision, and purpose. And for me personally, my purpose, I feel like, is just to make the world a little bit more magical, to help people see magic that's inside them, to see the magic that's all around us, to feel the magic moving through us. Yeah, it the world really is quite a magical place. Sometimes I express it in this idea of seeing the world like magical realism in a nonfiction world.
I'm still stuck on what if and of course, and I'm trying to tune into that. Can you unpack a little of that and give us the visceral experience of it? Or maybe, you know, even when you were young, you know, the first time or early in my life, the first time I can remember what if occurring to me, and then maybe the first time you felt that of course occurred to you, and whatever comes to mind, and, you know, what comes up for you?
Yeah, no, this is funny. I hadn't thought about sort of the first instance, and the image that did come to mind is quite silly. So as a kid in the 80s, these Kangaroo shoes, I don't know if you remember them, as a brand called Kangaroo, quite popular. The little Velcro, and they had this like tiny little pouch, a little zipper pouch that you could put like a lucky penny in. So as a kid, I had a pair of these shoes that were like so cherished, because getting something like that was not an everyday occurrence. It was a really special event that I got those shoes. And we had this creek running through our backyard that had one time had a bridge, but never in my lifetime, it was never there. And the commercials for these like Kangaroo shoes were these kids jumping all over the place, jumping on play sets, making these leaps, doing all of these crazy jump, jump, jump all over the place. Well, I had the Kangaroo shoes now, right? And I remember thinking, well, I'm standing on the edge of what was the bridge. Here's the creek. I have the Kangaroo shoes. I can jump across this creek. What if I could? And so I jump, and I remember, you know, kind of coming to like on the other side of the creek, kind of half in. It was a very shallow creek, and it wasn't a great distance. It was maybe 4 or 5 feet. But I remember coming to like half in the creek and half out, and I was like, I did it.
That is wonderful.
It wasn't like, oh no, you shouldn't jump across the creek. I was like, yes, score, done.
So this is just too captivating. So through your life, now that we're on the what if track, but if you can throw up some memories, even through your teens or when you arrived in school or at Apple, or I'm sure my listeners would be interested as I am, as how you were able to sort of collectively hear the voice of Apple and how that converted to, well, what if, which maybe helped lead to the credo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful refrain. And you know, I can get really nerdy when it comes to language and things and sort of the beauty of different kinds of punctuation. So even just like a question, right? Like there's a piece that I wrote, if you don't mind, I could share like a little original poem.
Please do.
Yeah, there's a piece called A Question Marks the Spot. And it goes, a question marks the spot where wisdom grows, reaching up and out, around and through the decaying matter of what we thought we knew. And verbs reside in what we long to do in stillness, in song, and in soaring breakthrough. And united together, think what we could do. But where would be wisdom if we already knew?
Love that. Love that. As you were sharing it with me, because I know sometimes when I do presentations and I'm sharing them, I have an inner experience as I'm sharing it with someone who's listening and maybe even interested. What was your experience as you just shared that with me?
For me, you know, so often poetry lives on a piece of paper, you know, maybe in a frame on a wall, maybe in a book that's on a shelf, gathering dust. And I don't know that there are as many encounters with like the life of poetry. Like, I feel like it has a life of its own, you know, the poem itself takes on a life beyond what I could have conceived for it. You know, these things want to live in a way. And this was reinforced for me. I attended a program called Heroic Public Speaking a couple years ago, and it was the first time really that I shared some of the original poems that I had written. And I was kind of shocked by, you know, people's reactions were to it and how meaningful it appeared to be for them. And that sort of reinforced my efforts to actually just simply memorize some of them. So that in moments where I encounter sort of the conditions in which that poem like wants to play, that it can. And another one that I do, which isn't my poem, it's a poem by Rilke. I frequently find myself reciting Rilke's first elegy at the last time of the evening that I take my dogs out for a potty break. You know, it's like 10:30 at night here in the Sierra foothills in California. The stars are gorgeous in the sky. You hear the frogs, you hear the crickets, you hear all the things. And it's like one of those hours where it's like the magic is just in the air. And his poem, that poem is so profoundly powerful and beautiful. I kind of get swept up into it and just getting to say the words, you know, some of these poems and some of these writers, you know, it really does feel like they were connected to the divine when they penned these ideas. It's not even so much just the words, it's the ideas behind the words. And those ideas and the beauty that they put together like deserves life, you know? In some ways, I'm not religious, but in some ways reciting things like that poem by Rilke, it does feel like a religious experience. It feels like a prayer. It feels like an expression of gratitude just for that human existing in the world, and I get to know that they existed.
What do you think it touches in you? Because you're really giving a great example of the through line, your purpose and calling, and to be aware of what you're sharing with us and to be aware of what's going on underneath. And I like the way that poem you shared with us ended about, you know, knowing is kind of the enemy of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost want to get into a state of unknowing that instead of causing us anxiety,
yeah,
causes us discovery. You know, I'll share something with you because I've done a bunch of things. And for a year and a half, I did a one-man show called Steve Jobs Returns.
Really?
And I played Steve Jobs coming back from the dead with the turtleneck, the glasses, the 501 jeans, the New Balance.
Yeah.
And I kind of channeled him because part of my background is I'm a psychiatrist, and for 25 years, one of my specialties was suicide prevention, and none of my patients died by suicide. And I've given it a name, which you'll appreciate more than guests that I sometimes share it with, and it's called surgical empathy. And the idea being that when people are traumatized, they form psychological adhesions, not attachments, adhesions. And that limits the way they look at the world, the way they interact with the world, the way they look at themselves. And surgical empathy is an approach, and it uses a process which is very clumsy called empatholysis, like dialysis. So it lyses the psychological adhesions by using pinpoint empathy. And at the point that they're lysed, people start to cry and start to discover hope.
Yeah.
Because they feel felt in the dark night of the soul. And when they feel felt there and less alone, hope kind of trickles in.
Yeah.
I'm just sharing that with you because I thought you might be able to track with that a little bit. And when I played Steve Jobs, so what happened is I was able to look at the world through my patient's eyes. And rather than trying to treat them from the outside in, I would dive into their eyes and I would go wherever the hurt took me.
Yeah.
The hurt and the aloneness. And so I'd be curious. So one of the things I did with my Steve Jobs one-man show was it was all set up to introduce to the world two events. One was his going to Xerox PARC and finding the graphical user interface. And then his introducing the iPhone in 2007. And I said that one of the things that, and you can push me back, say, boy, you either you nailed it or you have no idea what you're talking about. What I say that one of the things that I think is true of visionaries is that they see the unknown as an adventure to be lived and stepped into, as opposed to a danger to be avoided. And they trust this because they've always stepped into the unknown. And sometimes because of their controlling personality, they get a little help from psychedelics or drugs because they don't want to prematurely go from divergent to convergent thinking. They want to spend some time out there in the unknown and explore it because it doesn't scare them. But there's a point at which it then turns a corner and it converges back into a vision of a Macintosh or a vision of a Tesla. And then they're able to sort of make that happen, you know, by bringing in all the other people they need to make those things happen. And it was fun. I'll share one thing because I do sometimes culture change with companies. And in one of my presentations as Steve Jobs, I love to take Q&A as him. And so there's even a little video clip of this. I was presenting it, and I said, as Steve Jobs, you know, there's a lot of words that really that their usefulness and half-life is gone, but people sort of corrupt them. And words like mission and vision, they're meaningless because everybody uses them. And words like culture, everybody misuses them. So in the audience, someone asked the question. They said, well, Steve, what would be a better way of using the word culture since you don't seem to like the word? And then in my Steve Jobs persona, I said, I don't have a word for it, but I have a phrase. And the phrase is, can't wait to go to work. Show me a company where everybody wakes up and says, I can't wait to go to work. You got a good culture. You know. And if you have a lot of the people saying, oh, I'm stuck, I'm trapped, you better fix that. But can't wait to go to work. It's pretty simple. You know, reach out to your people and ask them, what do we need to do? So you can say, I can't wait to go to work. You know, what are we going to fix? Next question. But it was fun.
That feels pretty accurate. I actually had an encounter in a Q&A with Steve when I was, this was pretty early in my career. So when I was still working at the North Michigan Avenue store in Chicago, I was part of this exchange program. So I got kind of plucked out of the store and dropped in corporate for 3 months and part of the worldwide developer marketing team. And they had these MBA interns as well. And they were putting this program together where we got to meet with the seven different, you know, sort of leaders across Apple and all these different sort of lines of work. So like product, hardware, software, that kind of thing. So of course, the one that everybody wanted to get into was the one with Steve. And I remember sitting in the theater at One Infinite Loop, and we were prepped, you know, before Steve arrived, probably by the woman who was running PR at the time. I can't remember who that was, of what we should and shouldn't ask. And it wasn't because you could ask Steve, but Steve had no qualms about shutting something down if that was not something he wanted to answer. And I remember, you know, people asked all these questions, you know, but nothing was really getting at like anything that was like really meaty, really juicy, like really insightful. And there was maybe 15 minutes before the whole session was about to be up. And I started to notice that my guts were churning and like I could get butterflies in my stomach. And I was like, why do I have butterflies? I don't have a question that I'm going to ask. And at some point, Steve was like, okay, I'm going to take one more question. And my hand shoots up in the air. And I was like, oh, okay, apparently I have a question. And Steve calls on me. So I stand up and I fumble through like my name and the store that I am at and all the things. And I'm trying to ask is, what inspires you? I don't ask what inspires you. I fumble through, you know, some people get inspired by running and some people have this moment of inspiration in the shower and da, da, da. Thank God Steve cuts me off. And he's like, that's bullshit. He's like, inspiration doesn't come in the shower. He's like, what inspires me? He's like, I get so frustrated when things don't work the way they should. And this is, I think, 2006. So this is the year before the iPhone. And he asks the room, you know, who here has a phone that they love? And like maybe 30% of the room raises their hand. And he's like, that's bullshit. Phones suck. Let me tell you why. And goes on about all the things that are wrong with the phones. Then he asks people who has a car that they love, right? Smaller group of people raise their hand. He's like, that's bullshit too. All the cars suck, and tells you all the reasons why. It was the best answer he gave to any of the questions that whole session. He was the most impassioned, the most like revealing of him and his own thought process and the way he moves through the world. It was really insightful. I felt like a bit of an idiot for the way that I asked the question, but if I, you know, need to feel like a bit of an idiot for half an hour to get to listen to the genius that is Steve Jobs, I'm okay with that. I'll take one for the team. But yeah, he was a remarkable personality. And it was his own quote. I mean, I immersed myself in all the interviews that I could find, all of the TV segments, all of the recorded meetings that were internal at Apple, anything I could get my hands on to sort of imbue his spirit and point of view and values and everything into myself when I was working on the Credo project, because he had passed by that point in time. You know, it was one of his quotes, which was, I'm going to paraphrase, something to the effect of, if you wake up, you know, too many days in a row, not excited about the day you have ahead of you, something's got to give, something needs to change. And I personally, you know, had years of those days at Apple before I finally made a change. I would say my wake-up call was protracted, but you know, it was Steve. And I do think that these visionary leaders, for whatever fear center is part of the human makeup, I feel like they have just a different one. You know, the unknown is this sort of beautiful, exciting place full of potential. And you know, someone like Steve had enough experiences with just imagining something into being and walking forward as he's imagining that into being, that the road itself, the like, you know, he's walking into the void, but he's managing to make the substrate he is standing on arise at the same time too, right? And all the people showing up to magically make the thing happen too. it's an incredible gift, you know, and I know some folks who have a similar gift, different, you know, industries, different worlds. It is a wonder to behold, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel very lucky to have gotten to work at Apple, you know, during his time and to have had, you know, just the few encounters that I did have with him.
Quick pause for a good cause. Over my creative career, I've helped some of the most influential people and brands on the planet express who they are and what they do. And too often, for too many people, that's harder than it should be. Because of imposter syndrome. Because people don't know where to start or what to include. Because how you present yourself to the world matters. And that's a lot of pressure. In my Build a Bio course, I'm here to remind you how amazing you are while helping you learn to think like a writer. So you can confidently, authentically, and powerfully express yourself when it matters most. Visit causeeffectcreative.com/bio or check out the show notes to learn more.
Well, so you mentioned that as one of the wake-up calls, and it woke you up to what?
So if that, you know, that story around the Q&A with Steve was in 2006, if you fast forward about 10 years later, you know, I'd moved from being in a retail store in Chicago to being in a retail store at Fifth Avenue in New York, getting hired into the team that designs and builds the retail stores. And I was doing kind of visual storytelling for them for about 4.5 years, art directing, photography, designing presentations that go in front of Steve and the board, things like that. And then I ended up getting hired as a writer, and I did that for a number of years too. And on paper and in real life, it was like an incredible trajectory, right? It's a thing dreamed of by so many retail store employees to get to go from retail to corporate, period. You know, and to get to go from retail to corporate and then have the kind of roles and opportunities that I did have, right? It's not a common experience. And I know I'm very fortunate. And, you know, along the way, I got super burned out. You know, I kept getting sick and I couldn't get well. And, you know, it got to a point where, you know, when I was traveling with Angela for the first time as her speechwriter, and this was kind of a big deal because Apple historically didn't let any of the SVPs go and speak publicly. Like on their own, you know, but Angela had a background where she had been, you know, head of Burberry. She was used to doing that. She has her own brand, her own voice, her own following, independent of Apple. So that wasn't something that was going to change for her. So I'm traveling with her for the very first event where she's speaking publicly. And I got food poisoning. And, when I got home, I got so sick. I think I lost about 3 liters of fluids in 12 hours. And I joke that food poisoning shows up in one of three ways. There's upper, there's lower, and there's both. Well, I had lower and I got so sick. I ended up passing out in the bathroom. And I fell and I hit my head on a stool that was in front of me and then fell backwards and cracked my head on a travertine floor. And when I came to, my partner was standing over me, you know, looking understandably concerned. And, you know, I'm there. I'm like, you know, I have no pants on. I'm on a deadline. This was the very first time in my entire career, and I think I've been there about 11 years, where I was in jeopardy of not meeting a deadline. And I get taken to the ER, get admitted, x-rays for like a broken nose and neck, all these things. I had vertigo, I had a concussion. I message my boss at the time, my manager. I'm like, hey, look, I'm sick. I don't think I'm going to be able to get you those talking points for Angela's speech in Dubai on Monday, you know, and after the message you get back, you know, that you hope you get back, that's like, oh, wow, that sucks. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I got the message that I knew was coming back in some form or another, where he said, sorry to be worky, but this particular job doesn't care about our feelings. What do you have? You know, and what I had was vertigo and a concussion. possibly a broken nose or neck. What I had was a totally backwards set of priorities. And I had the question, it was like, how the heck did I get here to this moment in my life? And how do I get out? I mean, that was my big wake-up call. And even from that moment, you know, it took another year and a half, I think, before I left Apple. That was in 2017. But it led me to starting to ask, what if again? You know, I was like, when was the last time that I really felt meaning, purpose, joy? When was the last time I felt alive? And it was back when I was in art school, just making things. You know, they weren't there. They didn't have, you know, a commercial application. They didn't have, you know, some deadline attached. It was just something that wanted to exist in the world. And because of the creative process, it just did. And so I thought that was my wake-up call. I thought my wake-up call was, I need to make art again. And so I looked around my apartment and I had no space to make art. So I thought, I need space. Maybe I can get an Airstream trailer and, you know, fix it up, make it a portable art studio and take it on the road. So I turned to Craigslist and start doing a search and very quickly discovered two things. One, I had no idea how expensive Airstream trailers were. It would have been a great investment to go back in time, buy one, hold on to it. And two, that I was thinking way too small because I stumbled across the ad that changed my life. There was an ad that said, for sale, artist retreat center with hot springs and gallery, New Mexico. And the ad went something like, are you an artist who's always wanted to make a living making art? Ever wish you could live in a beautiful location surrounded by other artists while making a living making art? And the ad went on, but by the time I got to the end, I was crying because it was everything that I ever wanted but didn't think was possible. And here it was with a price tag on it. And I met the woman who owned it. I learned about her business model. It was super simple. It was a place for people to stay, a place for people to create. One of those places was an Airstream trailer. And that's the only reason I found this ad. And sometimes the universe is subtle when it sends us messages. This place was located in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. The universe has an incredible sense of humor sometimes. Ultimately, I did not buy that business, but it woke me up to the idea that I could. And within 2 months of doing that search on Craigslist, I was in contract on this property here in Murphy's, California. And it was because of that concussion.
So apply the what if right now and aim it towards the future without any pressure about it.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that, if you apply what if, what follows that?
If I apply what if to right now, and I'll anchor in the land of make and believe because that's what's here and that's what's coming up. You know, what if I find the people most alive and excited by this idea and wanting to be part of bringing it to life and be part of co-creating the culture and community that desperately needs this and desperately wants to be a part of bringing it to life? What if finding a way to bring these kinds of experiences to life, what if we find a way to make that sustainable and accessible to more and more people, right? If we have a model that works, what if we give it away for free? So other people can do it too. What if this land of make and believe here in Murphy's is just the first one? What if they're all over the world, not in a way that I have to own a thing, but in a way that we have a shared sense of principles and values and culture and goals so that you could go from any one to another and feel like you're at home, you know? And what if it's an experience that you can have at home? You don't have to go to a place where it feels like you disconnect from the world. There are moments when you need that, but it's not always available, you know? What if the land of make and believe is a state of mind that we can inhabit whenever we need to, wherever we are?
I want to share what it's coming up for me. And I'm going back to the poem you shared in the last line about it, where something about wisdom is counter to what we think we know. And as I've been listening to you and listening with you, what I'm hearing is, what if there was a way to spend time in the space before possibility? Because possibility is a little like knowing. And there's something, as soon as you focus on possibility, yeah, it gives you a direction, maybe gives you a strategy, maybe gives you a way to monetize it, but you've lost something.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost the fluidity in the area of creation. It's almost like as soon as you name something, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what if there was, and there's something very free before the time you name it. I was on some interview, because I give a lot of interviews too, where I said, you know, there's a real rush away from experience in that premature understanding and busyness.
Mm-hmm.
And because the experience creates too much free-floating anxiety, and so people need to nail it down into something, but it loses some of the essence of it in the process of nailing it down into something like understanding. And I think it goes back to my work with suicidal patients, is when I joined them in the dark night of the soul, and it was just, and my message was, it's worth keeping you company there.
Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah, it's worth keeping you company there. Why would you want to do that? Because you've been there all along. And you've been there alone too long. And the combination of alone too long is contributing to your not wanting to be around at all. So if it would be okay, unless you tell me you want various treatments for me to try with you, which haven't worked, why don't I just find you wherever you are?
Yeah.
And then keep you company there. Couldn't hurt. So we might have to explain to other people, what the hell is the treatment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but are you tracking with any of what I'm saying? Is the what if there was a way to? It's interesting, because as I go back to your sharing the Steve Jobs experience, that's bullshit. So there's a phrase that one of my mentors, a fellow named Warren Bennis, big leadership guy, shared with me. He got it from a playwright, Saul Bellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrase was, be a first-class noticer,
mm.
You know, which is different than looking, watching, seeing, concluding. Just notice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel blessed, because I get to see my three grandchildren who are three and under every day, and I just watch the way they watch, you know, and they'll chase after something, and then they'll stumble and cry and whatever. But I wasn't that present with my children when they were young, because I was too busy, you know, earning a living. But this has been wondrous. You have been wondrous.
I like to live in a wondrous world.
Well, you're one of the very best advocates and spokespeople for it.
There was something that you said about naming and how naming... Sometimes, I don't know if you use something as extreme as kill a thing, but it takes something away, the naming. And I had a very visceral experience with this once. I was in a retreat program in Ojai. It was a 9-day school for the work with Byron Katie. And I don't know if you're familiar with her work. Mm-hmm. There was a meditative walk we would go on in the mornings, where it's silent we're in groups, we're all going in different directions, but we're led by someone who knows where we're going. And the first day we're told, walk through the world as though nothing has been named. And you get to name it. And so I think, oh, as a writer, I'm very excited about this. This is going to be so fun. I'm going to name all of these things very interesting names. So I was moving around, you know, trying to name everything very quickly. Like there was an open grate with fire. I was like, oh, those aren't flames. Those are passions, right? Finding all of these names and trying to attach them to, you know, objects, living things, all the things you encounter just across the walk. And I couldn't keep up. There were too many things to name. And it got sort of stressful. Day two, we had another walking meditation tasked with the same thing. I couldn't keep up. I found it really stressful. Day three, I was hungry. And so I just started naming everything biscuit. Day four, everybody else in the group was naming things. They had it covered. I didn't need to name anything. And it was really nice walking through the world without things having names, because it helped me to detach from what I thought I knew about them. And I had a really profound moment sitting on a bench, just being present to this beautiful environment that I was in and looking at what some part of my mind knows are trees, but removing tree from my knowing and from my noticing. And that allowed me to notice the wind moving in a way that it felt like the trees were breathing. And that I just got to be present to their aliveness. And that removed so much of that perceived separation between me and everything else that was around me. And that was a really profound experience for me. And it's, you know, one of those beautiful tensions of being a writer. You know, there is so much power in words, you know, and in finding the right word. And simultaneously, I'm aware and I advise folks not to worry about the words always so much, right? Find the sentiment, find the idea, find that and get really clear about what that is. The words can come later, but, you know, there are some things that are just inexpressible, you know, that you just encounter, and you might find approximations to share that experience with other people in some way. Sometimes that's without words. Maybe that's in some kind of visual medium, like auditory medium, dance, movement, whatever. And, you know, sometimes you can't. Sometimes they're just an experience that's just, you felt it. That's for you to hold on to and to return to when you need it. So yeah, that's what came up when you were talking about the naming thing. I can still see that sort of little stand of trees that I was just in relationship to in an entirely different way than I had ever been with any living thing ever before.
Quick pause for a good cause. By now, I think you know my life is dedicated to creating an electric atmosphere where creativity thrives, especially yours. I've recently launched a service on Voli where you can consult with me one-on-one at a fraction of my standard rates. Are you wrestling with a creative, writing, or branding challenge? Want to get a taste of what it's like to work with me? Book an Ask Me Anything experience or subscribe to my advisory service. Let's express your visionary ideas with poetic power. Consult with me on Voli. Check out the show notes to learn more.
There's an exercise that I keep refining, but if you like it, you're welcome to use it in any of the work you're doing with other people. It's called the prove, show, please, hide, grab exercise. And you say to people, imagine that your personality is a circle, and in it are the parts of your personality that are trying to prove, show, hide, please, or grab onto something. Now imagine letting go of all of those. What's left? And many people will say nothing. You could say, well, you may think it's nothing, but if you're patient with it, there may be a calling that's been trying to get your attention for years, but it always got a busy signal because you were too busy proving, showing, hiding, pleasing, or grabbing. And if you can just allow yourself to let go of those, you might be able to hear what's trying to reveal itself to you.
Yeah.
And don't rush to name it, by the way, because if you rush to name it, then you have to prove to your, you know, your analytical mind that you have control of this not to be controlled experience.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, this has been wonderful. So how can people find out more about you? Because I'm sure they share my sentiment that we've been mesmerized, and there may be people who want more mesmerization.
For anyone seeking mesmerization, you can find me at causeeffectcreative.com. That's my agency. I'm also on most of the socials at Anita Visions, all one word. You can find me on LinkedIn that way, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I don't do a ton of posting on the socials, but I'm narrowing in on doing it on TikTok more often because I find the exchange with the audience is a lot more dynamic and really fun. So hit me up on there. I would love to say hi to anyone.
And I believe she would. So thank you, Anita, and thank you to our listeners. And if any of this shows up as video, to our viewers, I hope it's been as enlightening and calming and refreshing and mesmerizing as I found it. And so until next time, when wake-up calls come your way, don't brutalize it. Let the wake-up call introduce itself to you, and it might introduce you to yourself. And anyway, thank you for tuning in, and please share this with people who you think it might help, and including the people you care about. Take care.
If you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving a review or subscribing. I love helping my fellow podcasters out.
Thank you for listening to Hyperactive Imagination. If what you've heard lights you up, please subscribe, share, rate, and review. Your energy helps our show grow and go. Our original theme music is by Landon Sears and was made possible by Songfinch. A special thanks goes to my producers, Megan Pintas and Norberto Mentana. I want you to be a hyperactivated part of our show too. If you have ideas, stories, poems, or more you'd like to contribute to the show, please record a message on our Pod Inbox hotline. Go to hyperactiveimagination.com and tap the floating red button that says Leave a Message. And while you're there, sign up to get news and updates from the Anitaverse. We want creative community to be at the heart of hyperactive imagination. Complete our type form in the show notes and tell us what you're looking for. Keep up with my life behind the show by following at Anita Visions on TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until next time, the spark inside me is sending the spark inside you a whole bunch of oxygen.